Well, good afternoon, good evening, good morning, good night, wherever and however you may be listening to the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast today. I thank you very much for listening and hope you get the most out of this episode. My name is Neil Horowitz, your host as always. You can follow me on Twitter at NJH287 and check out the podcast's website at dsmsports.net. Really excited for today's episode. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Everyone was talking about South by Southwest in March when it occurred in Austin, especially with this year having a unique sports track with several panels and guests talking about everything up and coming in the tech area of sports, both from the on-field and off-field perspective and fan experience as well. And so we're going to talk to Tariq Ahmad, social business manager at IBM, who attended South by Southwest and has been a longtime expert in social media and sports, and even wrote a PhD paper some years back on social media use in the NBA. So someone who is very knowledgeable and will help us dissect what happened at South by Southwest, what was discussed, and what to look for in the upcoming year when it comes to the usage of new and emerging trends and technologies in the sports world. But before we get to our conversation with Tariq, let's get into this episode's helpful tool. And this episode's helpful tool is a freemium website called Mention.com. And it does pretty much exactly what you think it would. It's similar to Social Mention and Topsy and some of the other ones out there, except this one will actually send you alerts and give you some better statistics and allow you to break it down by medium a little bit better as well, and is more mobile friendly than the others. So how does it work? You are allowed to create one alert for free. From there, it does cost money, but if you're operating for a single team or a single brand, oftentimes that single alert is all you need. So you can create that single alert for free, and if you find it helpful enough, you can obviously pay to create others. But what it allows you to do is track mentions on several platforms, social platforms, and digital platforms across the web. Otherwise, you're sort of looking at a buffet of different sites to track all these things, boardreader.com, socialmention.com, Topsy. There are some good ones out there, but mention.com really does a good job consolidating it all for you and giving you some raw metrics, some stats over time about how much you're being mentioned. You can also export those, especially if you pay for the premium version of the website. You can access Mention.com on Android and iPhone, so it's mobile-friendly and create alerts to alert you right away if something is used. I would recommend using it to track given campaigns over time. If you have a specific hashtag you're pushing or a campaign that involves a sponsor or a keyword. But definitely check it out. The coolest thing is you can look at it by medium, so you can easily see, okay, these are all the tweets, these are all the Facebook posts, these are all the stuff that's coming from blogs or message boards, and it can be a very helpful free tool to sort of see what people are talking about when it comes to your brand and what they're saying online. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool. It's called Mention.com. Similar to a lot of your social media mention trackers out there, SocialMention.com is another one, Commune.it, something we've discussed before, and just a way to really track who's talking about you, where they're doing it, what they're saying, and it's a freemium way to do it. Of course, there are a lot of enterprise things out there that can help you out, and IBM is a company that knows all too well about lots of data and enterprise-level things, and we are very pleased to welcome in Tariq Ahmad today, social business manager with IBM, and really just a long-time expert in social media and sports, someone that has been very helpful to me over the years. And so we're very pleased to have him here. Welcome to the podcast, Tariq.
Thank you for having me, Neil. I appreciate it. I don't know about this expert word, but just trying to learn as much as I can and pass it on.
Well, you know what? I could have called you a social media guru, but I avoided.
Oh, that's even worse.
So, are you familiar with Mention.com, or does IBM utilize any enterprise level solutions that helps it listen?
Yeah, absolutely. We do leverage quite a few proprietary tools that we have partnerships with other companies. We use them for various things. You know, some are for mentioning, some are for listening, some are for amplification, et cetera. So I have heard of Mention.com. I haven't used it though, but I am familiar with the platform. But yeah, IBM does use some tools for listening, and it really helps us to see what's going on in our ecosphere of social media and how we can engage and connect with internal and external influencers as well.
Definitely. I always say that social media is your quasi focus group, and it's even better because focus groups know they're being watched. In social media, people are genuine, they're saying what they really think, and tools like that help you see what they're saying. Very cool.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's so important to be able to mine that data and, you know, see things that you may not have been able to see otherwise. So it definitely allows a nice peephole into the broad world of social media and how you can leverage it.
Well, we are going to have a great conversation right now, Tarek. You were recently at South by Southwest, checking out a lot of the panels there, especially some of the sports stuff. And we also know that IBM does great stuff with all their business consulting, and you're up and coming with their social media stuff. I haven't been there for a year now. So I'm looking forward to talking with you. South by Southwest was really cool, as is every year, even with some of the crazy stuff going on as well with the accident there and all that. But hey, Tarek, before we get started, we of course start out every interview with a chance for you to sort of tell us your story, your career path, how you got involved in social media and sports, your path along the way, how you got to where you are now, and of course, any tips for any listeners who are aspiring to work in sports and social media themselves.
Sure. So I guess we can just jump right into how I got into social media and sports. So when I was working on my PhD at the University of Northern Colorado, you have your final and massive project, which is called a dissertation, and it has to be a unique body of research on something that has not been done in the intersection. Or essentially what it is that you have to provide a contribution to the field of your discipline. So my program was sport management, and I was thinking, what can I do to provide some sort of value within the ecosphere of sports? So then, you know, I was really getting heavily into social media, and it wasn't really that heavy of a research topic. So I figured, why don't I take two things I like, or excuse me, two things I love, which is sports and social media, and do a dissertation off of that. So I passed it on to my advisor. He agreed. And then my actual dissertation was on social media and the NBA. So it was an analysis of how NBA teams evaluate, manage, and implement social media strategies. So I interviewed seven NBA teams' social media directors on how they use that. And then thankfully, it became the first doctoral level research done on that intersection. I actually presented my research at South by Southwest, which is ironic you mentioned that, 3 years prior in 2011, because it was the first level research done on that intersection. So it's interesting, because social media actually moves so fast. If you go back and read the dissertation, it's almost out of date, because all that I talked about with the directors were basically Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, because Instagram wasn't around, Pinterest wasn't around, Vine wasn't around, you know, all these other sites weren't around. It was just focused so heavily on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube because that's what was available. And now that we're moving more into, you know, more social media tools, the research has really opened up. And now, since social media, the floodgates have opened, there's social media research and social media and sports research out there available. So basically, I
Good
got
talk. Before we skip ahead, I'd love to hear what was sort of your thesis for your doctoral project, and what did you learn in your research?
The one main thing I learned is that every team uses social media differently than the others. So it seemed to be that every team had a specific focus. One team said, okay, we do the best with video. One team said, we do the best with interviews. One team said, we do the best with customer service via social. One said, we do the best with content. One said, we do the best with engagement, et cetera. So each team used it, but they each felt that they had one really good thing they did well at compared to other teams via social. So I thought that was really interesting.
Definitely. So okay, so you were a doctor of social media and sports, and tell me where you went from there.
So after I finished that, I was actually unemployed for like 10 months, to be honest. So that's interesting you said to give us some advice at the end, which I will. And then I interviewed for a handful of jobs and then actually applied for a job with IBM. I got a call for an interview a couple weeks later, did the interview, and then I didn't hear anything for about a month. And then I got a job offer by email, and then thankfully took, you know, accepted the position and then relocated to New York City, which is where I currently work in the IBM offices there in New York City as a social business manager. So to get to your last point on the question, any advice, don't be afraid to take an unconventional path into sports. So, you know, people should not feel like, hey, I have to work in sports 100% of my jobs to continue to work in sports. Like, my path was a little bit unconventional in the fact it's more academic based, and I have the backing and I have the interest, and then things I do on Twitter and other social media sites. And then even, you know, my job itself right now does not entail anything with sports, but it does entail social media 100% of my job, still tying in sports on a personal level, such as doing this podcast with Neil Horowitz and doing other content on, you know, Facebook and Twitter, you know, Twitter especially. So I guess some advice is, as I mentioned, you know, don't be afraid to take an unconventional path to get where you want to be within sports and social media.
Oh, I love that. And from someone like myself too, who has pivoted back and forth between sports and the marketing world, I can certainly say that, you know, developing skills is the most important thing. I mean, what you learned while you were studying sports, while you were studying social media, is stuff that I'm sure you're using with IBM today. And at the end of the day, it's what skills do you have that are going to help my business, whether it is a sports team or not. I mean, sports is obviously a very unique market, but skills are skills. Sales skills are sales skills, and analytics skills are analytics skills, and you're living proof of that.
No, you're 100% correct, Neil. It's, you know, what, you know, sports is a business, first of all. So what business aspects or business backing can you provide? And, you know, as you mentioned, I'm a big believer in that too. Like, every job you have, you build a skill set that you can take anywhere else. So like you said, if you know how to sell, then you can sell anywhere. I read a good interview with a former CEO of a clothing company. He said retail is selling somebody something they never needed in the first place. And he said if you could master that, you could pretty much sell anybody anything, which is so true. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
The kind of the opposite of selling ice to an Eskimo, huh?
Exactly. The complete opposite. So
well, tell me, we do want to talk about South by Southwest a little bit, but I do want to quickly ask you about Sports Shadow. Sure. Tell me, give our audience a quick rundown of what that is and was and where it is now.
Sure. So Sports Shadow is a site my brother Nabil and I created that tracks location-based services check-ins. So basically Foursquare and Facebook Places check-ins at sports venues. So the site's been up for a little bit over 3 years. We track usually like football, baseball, basketball, hockey, and college football as well. So we noticed our traffic really tended to gear more towards football, specifically college and NFL. And the other ones, with the exception of NBA, didn't do quite as much. So we're reshifting our focus on Sports Shadow. We'll probably just provide data for football because we see our traffic being the highest at that time, along with those stadiums being the biggest, which provides the largest amount of data as well. So it's more of a side project my brother and I did. And like I said, it's been up for about 3 years now. We've tracked, I don't know, somewhere close to about 8 million different check-ins from 300 different venues across different sports. So, you know, so it's a good site, you know, side project, something we just wanted to do on the side. And, you know, as we said, going forward, we'll probably just focus just on football because we see the most traffic on the site going forward with that.
Definitely a fascinating field, no pun intended, especially now with Foursquare kind of changing up their model from the proactive checking in to the more passive, hey, you're near somewhere where your friend had a tip for you, or here's what to check out right now, here's some deals near you. So definitely interesting to see, you know, where that's going to go in the future, especially in the very specific location-based activations at a sports venue.
Oh, absolutely, because even from the site, we would, you know, whenever we were setting up venues, I would go to all the Foursquare and Facebook Places pages and see, are any teams offering deals? And there are so few teams that offer any deals. Like the Golden State Warriors, they offer a Facebook Places check-in deal every single home game, which is like beyond phenomenal. And teams would only offer deals every once in a while. I know like the Milwaukee Bucks did a couple of games, like, hey, check in on Foursquare, show us your check-in, and you can get a t-shirt. And I know, I think, like, the New York Jets did something, too. But the Warriors definitely are the leaders in the sports LBS space, for sure.
Definitely a cool space, and we'll see where it goes in terms of whether people will utilize a third party, like a Facebook, or try to take things internally where they might have more control over the data being processed. It's a good segue into our South by Southwest conversation, or perhaps about where technology, especially in the sports space, is heading. So tell me quickly or briefly about what brought you to South by Southwest this year, and what your general thoughts were about sports being added as its own individual part of South by Southwest for the first time ever.
Sure. So what brought me to South by Southwest was work, actually. So I was there representing IBM on behalf of the social business team. We actually hosted an event with a couple of different companies, did a breakfast panel session that ended up doing really, really well. Our event hashtag trended like number 2 in the U.S. and number 5 worldwide, ahead of the South by Southwest hashtag, which is pretty nice. So pretty successful event. And the sports tracks were really good this year, actually. So going back to when I presented in 2011, my sports presentation was only one of like 7 sports presentations at South by that year. And then this year with the track, I think there were like 50 or 60 sports presentations. So it's good to see the growth of it for sure. Some of the panels are pretty good. It was generally, you know, like myself and you and your listeners, we're in the space. We see it every day. We hear it every day. So a lot of the stuff wasn't really like mind blowing. It was like, hey, here's how teams can leverage big data, or here's how teams can, you know, analyze, you know, athletes, things like that. I would say one of the coolest, I'd say the two cool, the okay, three, or one, then two, then three. So the three coolest panels were the Nate Silver and Bill Simmons panel was really good. There was a panel on the in-game versus the home experience. I think it was called like couch versus stadium, something like that. Like, what are the benefits of watching the game from home versus the game in the stadium? And the third one, which I didn't go to, but I read the transcript, was Shaq was there and gave a keynote session on wearable technology. And like, he's coming out with his own line of wearable tech and where exactly that space is going. So I would say from the sports panels, they were pretty good overall. You know, obviously, myself and you and your listeners are obviously big sports fans, so it was really, really good to see a sports track and have so many different presentations on sports. But I think coming out of that, I think wearable technology is going to be the big thing for sports going forward this year and next year. Not so much in terms of like Google Glass and GoPro, but I'm really thinking like it has to be like performance-based, you know, technology, you know, something like, I don't know if you've seen the Under Armour, they have this thing, it's called like an E39, like you strap it on your chest and they can measure heart rate and blood pressure and things like that. I think if leagues start implementing that from a large scale, like, you know, guys are strapped in the E39 or they're strapped in with some sort of technology underneath their uniform, underneath their pads, you have the scientist or you have the tech guy on the sidelines that says, okay, player A, it's the middle of the fourth quarter, he's operating at only 25% capacity. But player B is out there, he's operating at 60% capacity. Okay, let's pull player A out, let him rest, and keep player B in the game because he performs better at a later stage in the game. So I think if you can start seeing wearable technology during an in-game situation and can see those things on the fly, that can really make the difference between winning and losing. So I'm going to say that was the big thing. I'm going to say wearable technology next 2 years, look out for it, especially for on-field performance.
Before you know it, Vivek Ranadive, the owner of the Kings, will probably be firing his coach and just letting a computer make his decisions for him.
Yeah, exactly. You never know, right?
Is that I kind of did want to ask about that. About you mentioned all the tech and the data being used. We've seen sort of an evolution of teams starting to almost share data platforms with operations and ticket and marketing / business side stuff, where you have, say, a general manager of a team and a business executive of a team using the same data platforms for different purposes. One being to make player evaluations and decisions like that. The other to optimize what you're doing from a sales and marketing perspective. Does there seem to be one way leaning over the other. Like, I mean, there's only so much you can really invest in this space as a sports team. Are teams more focusing on the on-field stuff that they can use data for, or the fan experience and the marketing side?
That's a really good question. I think it's hard to tell if a team has to lean one way or the other. I'm thinking they're probably going to lean towards on-field or on-court experience, basically just like Moneyball 2.0. Like, they're looking at what kind of athletes, can we take this data, can we number crunch it, who is our best player for our value? So I think, you know, if teams are leaning one way or the other, I'm going to assume or guess that they're going to be more concerned, at least initially, with their on-field performance or their on-court performance first above anything else.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, you talk about, you know, the really cool factor of wearable tech and where that could head in the next year. And I mean, that can go where you are monitoring athletes to the nth degree, like you were discussing, with their heart rate and optimizing performance. Or it can, of course, go with a fan who's wearing a jersey with an RFID code reader on it, or wherever the case may be, and having them check in or passively check in every place they go. Very interesting stuff. So I did want to briefly touch on where sports really lies in this tech space, and you're in a really unique position to be able to make such an observation. In that, is a lot of times we look at sports as sort of leading the way, especially when it comes to second screen stuff, and really showing the growth of the supplemental technology of having a tablet or an iPhone while you consume content. Is it sports that are leading the way, or is it big tech like an IBM that's leading the way, and sports kind of adopting what they can, or I think it's a combination thereof?
I think it's definitely a combination thereof. I think whenever you think of cool things with technology, sports tends to be one of the leaders in that, just because it seems more fitting. You're like, ooh, we have this new technology, how can we use this on the playing field, or how can we use it? Because it seems like with sports, there's actually a purpose. You know, like, say you have a piece of wearable technology, it's, you know, whatever, wearable technology XYZ. And if you're just a normal person and you're wearing it and you're walking down the street, you know, yeah, whatever, you know, it's cool, but maybe it's not that cool. And people are looking at you funny, like, what is this guy doing? With sports, it seems that there's actually more of a purpose to it. Like, wow, we have wearable technology XYZ. Let's strap it up to our player and see what kind of data we can get from it. Or can we get a cool video from it? Or how can we measure it? So it seems with sports and wearable technology, with sports, there's actually a purpose for using it, and that can provide more of an insight to what athletes are doing, what athletes are thinking in terms of the technology. Then in turn, it can go full circle and then provide, you know, scientists and managers and GMs data from what they see, you know, whether it could be all the way to the top of making business decisions, or as small as something as, wow, this is kind of cool, I'm glad we're using it. So it seems to be more of a mix, but sports does seem to be a very natural fit for that type of technology.
And I think you could definitely see some trickle down, so to speak, where a sports team might start out using a piece of wearable technology to track everything under the sun, from heart rate to blood pressure and performance level and all that, and eventually be adopted by your amateur level athlete, by your kid trying to see, you know, can they run as fast as this player or that player. And so I definitely it'd be interesting to see how that trickles down from the top and penetrates really a bunch of other markets.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's nice to see, you know, sports can be the leader in that. And like you said, if it does trickle down to, you know, either like all the way down to elementary school, or like you said, different aspects, it'll be interesting to see where it goes.
So tell me about you mentioned a little bit of the couch versus in stadium experience, and how to make the most of wearable technology. And there's so much. I mean, South by Southwest every year you see so many next big things that are labeled quote unquote. What does seem to be the main focus though of the sports panels that you saw? Is it that live attendance going down and sort of battling the couch? Is that the number one conflict, or not conflict, the number one issue sort of top of mind for sports executives now? Or was there other things too that came out as what's keeping an executive up at night?
I think it was more, you know, not only that with the, excuse me, with, you know, people basically cheeks in the seats, But it just seemed to be going back to the technology aspect of it. You know, this is the way our world is going. Our society is going in this way. Do we have the resources available to use this technology to make our teams better? So that seemed to be the big things, because there were quite a few presentations on big data in sports, player analyzation, you know, things along those lines. So I think the key with big data is not only is that next, but executives must be thinking, we need to get our hands on this, but can we afford to do this? And if we can, will it really be worth it? So I think that was one of the main things I saw coming out of it this year.
And how about from a vendor perspective? I mean, you work for a company itself that works with a lot of brands to help them make the most of their software, of their data collection and data analysis. Is that kind of where you saw the vendors coming from? Was we're going to help you collect all this data to sell more tickets or to win more on the field? And did it seem to be any trends in that realm as to what kind of problems these vendors are trying to help teams solve?
Yeah, that's a good question, Neil. That's definitely something I saw from a lot of vendors in the expo hall. It was like the main convention hall where all companies had their products. And that's what it seemed to be. It's like, we can take this, it's basically like a funnel. We can take this, you know, millions and billions of pieces of data and simplify it for your business based on all this analysis. So it seemed to be that, you know, how can we take the most amount of information into the simplest result possible? So that definitely seemed to be, you know, going on the big data trend, we have all these numbers, let's make it easy for you. So that definitely seemed to be one of the big things coming out of it.
Yeah, very interesting. So it's every year South by Southwest, it seems like some software platform or some social network is labeled the next big thing. And then next year it's something else and everything else falls by the wayside. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to ask you yet about what the next big thing was coming out of this conference, but I do want to start off by asking, do you think year to year that a lot of these things tend to play out, or is it oftentimes the tech is really cool, but teams or brands or organizations have trouble figuring out how to make the most of the technology to get the ROI they need to justify investing in it?
Yeah, definitely the latter. I think the teams are starting to see, you know, it's two parts. It's one, it's the cool factor. Look at this, we can use this piece of technology to help our team. But then it's sometimes they get realistic, be like, oh, okay, what if we invest, you know, five figures, six figures into this piece of technology and we don't get anything from it? Now we've just burned all that money, which could have been used into, you know, going back into the community or helping sell tickets or hiring a VP or, you know, whatever. So, you know, I think teams definitely have to be careful. When teams, schools, leagues, they have to be careful on, you know, wearable, not wearable technology, but just technology in general. You know, it's more about that, you know, getting past the wow factor. You know, it's like, wow, this is really cool, but how can this help us? Can this even help us at all? So I think you'll definitely start to see a lot more teams. I mean, they are doing it already, but you'll definitely start to see more teams, more leagues, more schools, you know, really take a long, hard look and see, you know, this is cool, but will this really help our ROI? Will it help our bottom line? Will it help our performance on the playing field as well?
Very good. So people and brands, organizations, et cetera, are really starting to get smarter about finding the value in these cool, novel things and not just trying to adopt the next big thing because they think it's going to be the next big thing.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not so much as, hey, we're going to be first. It's, okay, this is cool. Does it help my bottom line? You know, does it align with my business values? So I think in this case, it's, you know, more so about, let's see if this actually works for us, as opposed to, hey, let's just be first. And if we don't, and if it fails, then we can say
we're just trying to be cutting
edge. First. So definitely teams, leagues. Exactly. I think they're definitely being a lot smarter about it.
Are you finding that it's similar from the vendor angle as well, in that instead of creating their cool new technology, they're actually showing off how their technology helps their clients' businesses?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I think something I saw was, you know, some vendors would just show their technology, but then I noticed other vendors were actually smarter about it, and they would say, okay, what line of work are you in? What's your business? What do you want to do? And then would plug in their information to the actual product and show them, like, hey, here's how this would work for you and your business. So I think that was the key. Instead of just showing a generic platform, you know, some of the vendors were actually smart and, you know, actually listened to the customer and showed them like a real use case scenario within the couple of minutes they were standing there. So it was cool to see that. So
what a concept. It's our favorite word in social media is that once in a while, just stop and listen to what your client is saying.
Shocking, I know.
Well, tell me too. Let's jump back to that original question of what is sort of what was the buzzword or the big next big thing coming out? Was it wearable tech? Was it Snapchat was being talked about, or you know, what were the few things that came out of the sports track in particular from South by Southwest this year that has you and or everyone else there excited?
Yeah, I think wearable tech, going back, I know it's like the 10th time I've said it, that seemed to be the big thing going forward. I think it really was capitalized or capped off with Shaq's keynote speech, because he talked about wearable tech and he's coming out with his own line of wearable technology. So that seemed to be the big thing. And I would say, at least from a sports perspective, that was the main thing coming out of it, and then followed by big data and analytics and how teams can start leveraging that data to make better decisions on and off the field. So wearable tech, big data seem to be
the two. Is there any sort of notion of utilizing the wearable tech products and or technology in general on the consumer side as well, or trying to enhance the fan experience, or is it first and foremost on maximizing the team performance?
No, it's definitely both. You know, I think that, you know, they wanted to see, you know, because not everyone is, if you look at a team and look at athletes, I mean, that's only 20, 30, 50 athletes, and there could be millions of fans. So you definitely don't want to pigeonhole the product into just on-field performance. You know, definitely want to have, you know, people wearing Fitbits and fuel bands and, you know, all these other pieces of technology as well. So, you know, definitely want an end experience as well as the on-field performance.
So what is being done in the space to really enhance the fan experience? I mean, especially going back to that panel you discussed about the battle against the couch, I guess. What are teams trying to do, and what do they see in the future that can help drive more butts to seats in the arena itself or in the venue itself?
I think it was more about, you know, just the actual experience of coming to the game, because you can watch a game at home and, you know, you don't feel the energy of the crowd there, you know. And, you know, it was more along the lines of what the in-game experience is like. You know, you have you're there with like 20,000 fans, you know, like 20,000 of your friends. You have options for things in-game, you know, drive people to the game. You know, actually going back to location-based services, you know, the nice thing is that don't just check into a sporting event, like, give me a reason to check in. It's like, hey, thanks for coming to the game and checking in on Foursquare. Here's 10% off the, you know, off your merchandise at the, you know, in the store, or a free parking pass, or like 30% off the concession stand, etc. You know, where I'm not getting that benefit if I'm watching it from home. So, you know, the reward doesn't always have to be monetary, but like, give fans a reason to come to the game, you know, whether it's Foursquare, whether it's, you know, social media of some sort. So it was interesting to see. I mean, there's obviously pluses and minuses to both sides. You know, you have the home experience, you know, there's no line for the bathroom, your own food, you can turn on the game 10 seconds before it starts. But the in-game experience was that it's just, you know, you can't beat a live sporting event, period, is what the whole thing was. And the whole key is, you know, really driving people to get into the seats and watch the game live.
It'll definitely be a fascinating area to watch and see sort of where it goes. And sort of staying on the same lines there, when it comes to investing in new technology and new ideas to try to drive these desirable business outcomes, is there a dichotomy of people with short-term outlooks and long-term outlooks? A lot of these investments, like Wi-Fi in a stadium or a larger distributed antenna system, you might not be able to recoup that investment overnight, but 1, 2, 3 years down the road, you're going to be damn glad you made that investment. So how does that sort of fly when executives are making really big decisions like that for investments?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, especially, I'm glad you brought up the Wi-Fi, because I was going to bring that up. I think just with the way technology is moving, that's almost paramount that stadiums have to do that. Because think about it, we'll say you're in a football stadium, you have 75,000 fans. I mean, that's 75,000 mobile devices, pretty much. You know, everybody has a cell phone. Some people bring a tablet to the game, and everyone's trying to use that, you know, use a network all at the same time to either text or tweet or Instagram or take a video, etc. So, yeah, I think up front, you know, the teams do take quite a large hit to the tune of several million dollars, but they know that over time, it'll basically pay for itself pretty much right away. So I think especially with Wi-Fi, I think that's pretty much paramount in order to, you know, have that going forward, because not only does it help the team, but it helps the fans, it helps the fan experience. And then going back to your previous question, that could be the possibility of driving more fans into the games, because knowing that one factor is like, hey, I like going to the game and it has good Wi-Fi, so I can send Instagram videos on the fly or tweets on the fly, or if the team is doing something like, hey, tweet your seat and the winner will get an upgrade, you know, now that my Wi-Fi is working and I'm tying in the, you know, in-game experience, that can be good as well.
Oh, I love how it all fits together, and it's one less reason for a fan to give for not going to the game, of course, as well.
Exactly.
And I think also looking at from both perspectives of, you're not just enhancing the fan experience, but you're also helping your own organization, because when you start to utilize these Wi-Fi networks, which oftentimes are owned by the team, and the data networks for that matter as well, the more engagement you have on site, the more use of the networks you have on site, the more opportunity there is for data collection and learning more about how your fans are using those networks, what they're doing during the games, and what they're buying, what they are looking to buy, et cetera. And so it's there's value from both ends there, I think, that some people are missing out on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that teams, you know, do look beyond the monetary value of it, and that's definitely a win-win for both sides. Like you said, data collection, and then fans are just happy, like, hey, I can actually use my phone in the stadium. It's something like you kind of take for granted, because you think like, hey, if you're walking down the street, my phone works, but people don't think like, oh, whenever I go to a stadium with 75,000 people, my phone should work fine as well. Sometimes it doesn't, you know, so, which is interesting, because we've actually gotten a lot of comments, my brother and I, about Sports Shadow because of that. It was, you know, it's like, hey, I would have checked into this game, but the Wi-Fi wasn't working at the game, therefore I couldn't check in, you know. So it's interesting, my brother and I actually thought about it. We didn't calculate it, but we're like, man, how many hundreds of thousands of check-ins were lost because of poor Wi-Fi in stadiums? So it's interesting to see that, and you know, it's good to see teams really making that investment going forward.
It's so true. It's almost like an abandoned shopping cart where you're trying to share that you were there. You're trying to be a fan advocate, a brand evangelist, so to speak. But you know that Instagram just won't post. It keeps failing or whatnot.
Exactly. You're draining your battery trying to get it to send, and it won't.
Very much so. Well, perfect segue though. Before we get to this episode's charitable stat, I did want to touch briefly on the whole notion of big data. And we talked a little about how it's being used, and it's obviously that can be a whole podcast in itself of all the ways big data can be used. But I did want to ask where the focus seems to be heading. Is it in more advanced collection techniques, or is it more looking at, okay, we have all this data now, we've been able to collect it, how do we make use of it?
Yeah, it definitely seems to be how do we make use of it. It's like your shopping cart example, like, you, okay, we have the shopping cart full of data, now what? You know, it's more like, oh, you know, like, hey, we just analyzed every single player's movement for the whole season. You're like, okay, and what? You know, so it seems to be like, we now have the data, how can we leverage the data? Because everyone knows, I mean, big data has been a big buzzword for the past couple of years, you know, rightfully so, because it is. But now it's, okay, that's great, we have all this data, how are we using it to help the team, help the organization, help our bottom line? So now it's more along the lines of cool, but now it's like, what can we do with it and how is this going to help us?
Certainly. And it sounds like you see that that notion affecting both the fan experience as well as the way teams run their player personnel decisions as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's more... yeah, it should be big data as a whole, as opposed to just how can we use big data to help us on the playing field, but it's how can we help it to use our fans, how can we help it to use our front office, etc. So it definitely has to be a very 360-degree holistic approach.
Very cool. All right, well, before we transition to this episode's charitable stat, I would be remiss, Tarek, if I did not ask you, What was the coolest thing, or it may be the most unusual thing that you saw while you were at South by Southwest?
Tuesday morning, across from the Austin Convention Center, Samsung had a... There was a surprise concert announcement. It was Jay-Z and Kanye, and the line was like around the building of like one full city block. It was like 9:30 in the morning. There were like 1,000 people out there wrapped around, just waiting outside to try to get a ticket for Jay-Z and Kanye's concert. So that was in itself pretty cool. I did not stand in that line, but it was pretty cool to see that. It was cool, but it was kind of odd / interesting to see that. I would say that from a just wow perspective, I would actually say the coolest thing I saw was Oreo cookies. They had a section set up outside called Trending Vending. So this actually was really awesome. So this, they actually took a 3D printer and they printed Oreo cookies with Twitter trends that happened on the spot onto the cookie, and you could eat it right on the spot.
Wow.
Which was like really awesome. I didn't stand in line either. Yeah, sorry, because there were like 100 people lined for the whole thing. So basically, this 3D printer, whatever was trending, it would like 3D laser it onto an Oreo cookie and then give you the cookie and then you could eat it. And it was like pretty mind-blowing, to be honest, that, you know, like it was like real-time marketing right on the spot. And I did Oreos, which of course are great. So I would say they actually scrapped the Jay-Z Kanye thing. Pretend I didn't say that. Trending vending from Oreo, by far the coolest thing I saw when I was there.
That is fascinating. I mean, it opens up a bunch of doors and questions about how you can make the most of that kind of technology and get value from it. But just Oreo staying ahead of the game, man, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. I think it was one, not only tying it into real time, but then two, since pretty much everyone loves Oreos, it was just really a win-win. So I would say that was definitely, you know, one of the coolest things I saw.
I love it. All right, well, we'll be right back with more with our Talking with Tarek segment. Some quick-hitting questions for Tarek Ahmad, Social Business Manager of IBM. But first, let's get into this episode's shareable stat. We'll be right back with that. Well, let me tell you, I do not lie when I say Tarek Ahmad is one of the best resources out there when it comes to social media and sports, and he did not disappoint in that conversation right there, and really dropped some insight and gave some great info about South by Southwest and what we missed if you weren't able to attend, especially all the sports track stuff, and what to look for in the upcoming year. But we'll be right back for some fun in our Talking with Tarek segment, some quick-hitting questions for Tarek as we get to know him more. But first, of course, we have this episode's shareable stat. And this episode's shareable stat comes, well, from South by Southwest. It's a very interesting stat in that from 2008 to 2013, so a five-year period, the live consumption of news dropped from 98% to just 70%. So back in 2007, 98% of people were consuming news live, and now only 70% are doing so. But if you look at sports content, 98% were consuming it live in 2007, and in 2013, from 2013, 97% were still consuming it live. So news goes from 98 to 70%, whereas sports goes from 98% to still 97%. It shouldn't surprise you really too much, as we all know that live sports is really one of the few remaining frontiers out there when it comes to the live viewing of any content. But think about what it means for a sports marketer. It's obviously going to get the attention of more partners who want an engaged audience watching their commercials, watching their activations. But also think about what it means from a fan perspective. If there is a high instance of live viewing, which these numbers support, there's less need for play-by-play and things like that you'll see on social media during games. If someone scores a goal, you know, add to it. Supplement, don't replicate. Supplement, don't replicate. I don't like seeing teams too much duplicating what people are already seeing on the screen. What good is it if you say goal and 3 exclamation points if the announcer on TV just said the same exact thing? So think about supplementing, adding, enhancing that live viewer experience instead of just duplicating what they're seeing on TV. Also, take advantage of that live viewer experience with CTAs, calls to action. Oftentimes, you have fans who are the most engaged and, of course, most emotional and excited and willing to act. So even though it might seem counterintuitive, use that in-game viewer and take advantage of the opportunity, whether it's during an intermission or even during the game itself, and put out your promotional offers then. Do a contest during the game or during intermission, during halftime, to build up your email databases. Do some things to promote engagement on your social platforms and try to spur growth during the game. Don't just think that your fans tune out when they're watching the game. That's when they're most active. You know they're viewing the game live, so that's oftentimes a good place, a good time to push out some of your marketing messages, as long as it's not disrupting the live viewing experience. And as we said before, you definitely want to emphasize your active live viewers with your partners. Oftentimes, you'll see some data reports showing you day part and hour and engagement by hour. And I'll shake my head and go, well, yeah, obviously the engagement is highest during games. Obviously, traffic is highest during games. But that doesn't it's not always as readily logical and commonsensical to your partners and to prospective partners. So show them, hey, we're going to give you an in-game activation on TV or commercial or wherever the case may be, and that is when our engagement, when our activity on our digital channels is at its absolute peak. Also, keep in mind that if fans are viewing everything live when it comes to sports, they're going to want it now, no matter where they are. So everything you produce is going to need to be mobile friendly, whether that's making use of an app, a mobile optimized website. Just think about the idea that a lot of people will be consuming your content live, whether that means they're in front of a TV or if they're sitting on a bus waiting to get home from work or from school. Also, be mindful that fans want to watch live and sometimes they can't. Sometimes you'll have unusual game times with different time zones. Other times games won't be televised. So think about that your fan is still likely tracking or following your game live. So when the case comes up and it's not easy for a fan to view a game live, that's when you'll want to really step up your coverage from a digital and social perspective, when that more detailed play-by-play could come into play because a fan otherwise can't see what's going on if they're not there, of course. Lastly, I think it's definitely interesting to look at where social TV ratings will go. Nielsen is currently working with the Phoenix Suns as sort of a guinea pig to give better metrics and better data for partners and for networks to really judge the effect of both watching the game live on the TV platform, the first screen, so to speak, and integrating that with the digital engagement piece, to really give you a true index, a true number of all of everything fans are doing and all the content they're consuming during a game. So definitely something to keep an eye on there. But we could talk all day about this shareable stat, a very interesting one and something to keep in mind and not terribly surprising. So again, that shareable stat from 2008 till 2013, live consumption of news dropped from 98% down to 70%, whereas sports stayed high, going only from 98% and staying up there at 97% of live consumption. All right, thanks again to South by Southwest, the sports track, for giving us that shareable stat. And we'll be right back for Talking with Tarek, our quick-hitting fun questions with Tarek Ahmad, social business manager of IBM and leader of the SM Sports Chat. All right, welcome back. That was this episode's shareable stat. Again, live consumption of news is going down year to year. From 2008 to 2013, went from 98% of people were consuming their news live, now only 70%. Whereas in sports, the number has only decreased from 98% to 97%. So just 1% difference there. People are still watching plenty of live sports. Does that surprise you at all, Tarek, that news consumption is dropping live, but sports is staying strong?
That does not surprise me at all, because sports is really valued on the live aspect of it. And I think that's the key, is people want to consume sports in real time. And, you know, there's a stat that, you know, Jim Delaney from Twitter shared, who was at Activate. He shared this. It was, sports is 1.5% of TV programming, but accounts for nearly 50% of Twitter activity. So that completely does not surprise me that, you know, because sports is meant to be consumed live, and just that 1% drop doesn't surprise me at all.
Definitely. And there's a reason I think that even the term second screen is so heavily associated with sports, even though you still see it a little bit with your American Idols and The Voice and whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a natural fit.
All right, sir, you survived your interview, and now it's time to have some fun. So, Tariq Ahmad, social business manager at IBM and guru of social sports.
No! Incorrect.
Are you ready, sir, for your Talking with Tariq segment?
The incorrect word, the G word you used there.
So. All right, let's get right into it. We're starting off with a fun one, but a tough one. Number one.
Okay.
South by Southwest, it's in Austin. We know a ton of great culture down there, ton of great food. So what's the best thing you ate, or maybe it's that you saw someone else eat while you were at Southwest, or South by Southwest?
Best thing I ate, Torchy's Tacos, 1311 South 1st Street, Austin, Texas. A friend of mine, Corey Lehman, who I work with, went to school at UT down the road, and I asked her, I said, hey, I'm going to South by Southwest, what do you recommend? And she hyped up Torchy's Tacos for like a good 15 minutes, so I had to do it. I went down there, completely worth it. So Torchy's Tacos, food truck, best thing I ate in Austin.
Wow, would not have guessed that. And good luck finding some quality Mexican food up there in New York, man.
Seriously.
All right, well, one thing that we didn't have time to talk about in our interview, but something that like I've said, has been very valuable to me, and I think most of our listeners may at least be aware of it, is the SM Sports Chat, the weekly Twitter chat, on Thursdays at 9 o'clock Eastern, or 9. Am I correct on the time there?
Yeah, 9 Eastern on Thursdays.
And it's a fantastic chat. It's been going for years now, talking about the latest and greatest social media and sports trends. So, 90 seconds or less, Tariq, tell me about the SM Sports Chat, what it is, the value it provides, how it's evolved, where you see it going. Just a quick rundown for our listeners about all the awesome things that you've done with SM Sports Chat and how it started.
Sure. So Caleb Mezzi, who you know as well, started the chat December 15, 2011. And I came in as a co-host after he had started it. And then from there, after a few months, I took over the hosting duties on that. So it's been a little bit over 2 years. Caleb did a really good job of getting it started. And I'm just trying to come in and add value to it as well. So basically the chat focuses on social media and sports topics, issues, areas, etc. As you mentioned, Neil, every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. Naturally, a chat started really slow the first, you know, handful of months. Then more people started getting onto it, and more people started to grow. Thankfully, we have a lot of students now that join in, mainly A, because it's probably for their grade for a social media class. But then B, we also see a lot of students still hang around the chat and, you know, try to get value from it. So I think the key with the chat is, you know, if it can provide value to anyone who joins in on it, whether it's something they didn't know about sports and social media or something they can take back to their organization, whether they work in sports or not, or something they can use for their own personal use on social media is key. So, you know, as you mentioned at the beginning of this podcast that, or maybe it was something we talked about before, is that, you know, sports is a business, and no matter what business you work in, you know, you need a certain skill set. So, you know, hopefully that the chat can provide value, it can provide some insight, it can provide some knowledge for anybody who joins in, whether they work in sports or not. So that is the value of the chat.
I would highly recommend everyone checking it out on hashtag SM Sports Chat every Thursday at 9 o'clock Eastern. And I'll say a couple of quick things about it. One, it shows that this industry, the social media industry, big surprise, is very connected, very interactive, and people are willing and wanting to learn from each other and share ideas. And number two is that social media, I don't have to tell you, is so fickle. It's changing every day. There's new tech, new trends, new social networks, and figuring out how others are using it, having a constructive conversation about it with people you respect in a similar role as you, it's so invaluable and one of the best things about Twitter that I've discovered, at least, and highly recommend it to everyone. All right,
yeah.
Number three, So we touched on this. A lot of things that are labeled the next big thing from South by Southwest. So whether it's from South by Southwest or not, and maybe it is wearable tech, as you discussed earlier, but number three in our Talking with Tarek, the next big thing that will actually take off in sports, digital, social media, tech, etc. in 2014 is blank. It'll actually happen, not just, we think it will.
I'm going to have to go with Moneyball 2.0. I think that teams are really going to start taking big data seriously, and the fact that let's see how this can not only help our fans, but how can this help us on the playing field, so or on the playing surface. I saw something earlier this week that a unnamed professional sports team, so obviously very vague, spent six figures to purchase a supercomputer in order to analyze data on how they can make better decisions on the field. So it looks like one team is actually pretty serious with that. You know, they didn't mention the sport or the league or what team or anything. So it looks like at least one team is pretty serious about investing six figures into some type of supercomputer, help them take big data and make better decisions on the playing field. So I think to answer your question, that will be the next big thing that will actually happen, because it looks like it is actually happening as of this week.
Excellent. Right. Revenge of the nerds. And also, I think you saw relatively recently as well is that it's coming to the fan side as well. You're seeing I saw recently the MLB Network or MLB Advanced Media was showing they are starting to integrate some of these really advanced metrics into their broadcast, and so that fans, and especially fantasy players, I imagine, can utilize some of this big data as well as the general managers and player personnel decision makers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's big, yeah, especially for fantasy, because it's ironic you mentioned that, because when I was doing my PhD, a guy that graduated the semester before I got there actually did his dissertation on fantasy football, and I read some of his research, and fantasy is like a multi-billion dollar industry. So, I mean, there's money to be had in the industry, and like you said, anything you can do to make fantasy football players make even one better decision every week definitely helps.
Oh, that's incredible. This is one I'm interested in hearing your answer to. So, tell me the sport or league with the best track record of innovation and or staying on the cutting edge is which sport or league and why?
I'm gonna go WWE, not because I'm a fan, but just the things that they do. You know, during the shows, they'll show like trending hashtags, like, hey, you know, this is the number one trend worldwide. And they started moving into different hashtag segments as well. Like instead of just like, you know, like their flagship show is Monday Night Raw, which is just hashtag Raw. But now they're starting to moving into segmented hashtags where it's, you know, hashtag Yes Movement or hashtag BNB, whatever it happens to be. You know, they've started moving into that as well. And I think they do a really, really good job. Not only that, but their athletes or their superstars and divas are very vested into social media as well. So I think the key to that is it's both things. Like one, there's the backing of the WWE, but then two, the actual superstars and divas and pro wrestlers are so invested in it and like using it as well. It makes a really big difference. So I'm going to have to go with the WWE as the cutting edge leader on that.
I like that answer a lot. And I think it's they're definitely an organization that understands that they are there first and foremost to entertain, and that the social media second screen, so to speak, is a fantastic supplement and a tool to entertain.
Exactly, yeah. Their app is really, really good. You know, a lot of things, even something really small where they'll be showing a wrestling match on TV and they'll say, okay, we're going to commercial, we'll be right back. But if you're watching the app, you can actually continue to watch that match uninterrupted and not miss a beat. So really, really good job of that.
And we'll have to certainly keep an eye on the WWE Network coming out in the next little bit here. All right, number five for you in our Talk on the Tarek segment. The best speaker you saw at South by Southwest.
Oh, that's easy. Neil Tyson deGrasse.
Mr.
Cosmos.
Cosmic.
Okay, so I didn't see him like in person, but we watched his live stream, and he's really, really good. I've seen him speak before, again, not in person, but just on YouTube or some live stream. But I would say, at least since I was in that vicinity of him, I would say that was definitely the best one. So,
Real quick for our visitors, then tell or for our listeners rather, to tell us who he is and what he discussed at Southwest.
He's an astrophysicist who actually, like, not only knows the stuff, but he's like a really entertaining speaker. And I guess there's a new show out called Cosmos. It's a remake of an old show, and so he's in the show. So he was hyping that up and just like spreading his general knowledge and smarts about just stuff in general. So even his Twitter is pretty entertaining. Like, he'll make like small observations about things you never thought of. You know, it's like, oh, well, this year there are three Friday the 13th, but that means there's also three Saturday the 14th too. Like, stuff you would never think of, but it's true. You know, things like that. So
yeah, he's kind of like Bill Nye the Science Guy for astrophysics.
Exactly.
All right, Tarek, number seven for you. Number six. And maybe not this is applicable. I'm not sure if you end up seeing Jay-Z or not. The best band you saw perform at South by Southwest, well known for their music down there.
I only saw one actual band. Okay, so there were a lot of music performers down there, like big time names, so like Snoop, Big Boi from Outkast, Lady Gaga, Jay-Z, Kanye. I didn't see any of them, but the only one and only band I saw was called Bad Things, and it was actually Shaun White. Mr. Olympic gold medalist is actually the guitar player for that band. So saw them play a small set, met Shaun White afterwards, really, really nice guy. So the one and only band that I saw was them, where they were pretty good. He was cool, so that would be the one I saw.
Not bad. Is there anything that guy can't do? Jeez.
He's pretty awesome human being.
Unreal. Alright, number seven for you, Tarek. Someone who's been studying social media sports for a long time. Tell me the one thing you wish teams understood or executed better in the SM sports space.
Engagement. So instead of just making it a one-way conversation, make social media a two-way portal. I think Amy Martin from Digital Royalty said it best. Social media is a telephone, not a megaphone. So make sure that, you know, you're really reaching out to the fans instead of just pushing content. It can be something as small as, you know, actually during when I was doing my research, one of the team social media directors gave me a really good piece of advice. He said something our team does is we ask fans questions via social. It's like, hey, what do you think the dunk of the year is? Is it this one with a link to the dunk, or is it this one with a link to the dunk? Tell us, you know, reply and tell us why. You know, even something as small as that, just to get people engaged, is really, really good. So I think if teams could do a lot more engagement, I'm not saying they have to reply to every single fan, because that's A, impossible, and B, you would have to hire like one or two people just to sit on Twitter and Facebook all day and do that. But I think maybe a little bit more engagement, because I think that social is now moving into, as big as social is, it's moving into the more one-on-one space. You know, there's a lady that I work with on my team within IBM. She says, like, one of my new things on social is show me you know me. So instead of just blasting out content, it's like, hey, Neil, you know, thanks for replying. We value your opinion. What do you think about this? So I think that's key. So hopefully, you know, teams are doing a better job. I think University of Miami, the crew down there, do a really, really good job with engagement. So hopefully we'll see a lot more of that going forward.
Definitely. Always has me shaking my head if I see a team or a brand's Twitter page and it's all one-way tweets, no replies, no retweets at all. And on the other hand, I love seeing when teams reply and personalize it. It's so easy to click on someone's profile name and see their first name, and it means that much more when it comes from the direct team and they actually use your name when they talk to you. Amazing.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah, I think it just makes it that much better. You know, it's just a better experience, not only for the team, but for that specific fan as well.
All right, Tarek, number eight for you. Getting to the end here. Obviously, SM Sports Chat is a great resource for this question, but tell me for yourself, and advice for our listeners, the best way besides SM Sports Chat to stay on top of the current trends in social media and sports.
You can go with the SM Sports hashtag, which is just the main social media sports hashtag. So I created that a little over 3 years ago. You know, thankfully, 55,000 tweets on it and counting, so a huge thank you to all the community and everyone who has contributed, even as little as one tweet.
I'll take some credit for that.
much obliged, sir. So, you know, I would say the sports biz hashtag on Twitter, And just knowing to follow, you know, certain people, you know, on Twitter, and even just doing a basic Google search, just doing like social media and sports or sports social media is a good way to do it. You know, reading up on certain, you know, blog posts. You know, you have like Jessica Smith, who's at War Jess Eagle, writes a really good sports social media blog. You have Tom Buchheim, who writes a really good sports social media blog. Kevin DeShazo, you know, keep Chris Yandel, people like that. You know, keeping up with them is a really, really good way to, you know, have all that content, you know, at your fingertips available for you as well. Obviously yourself, Sonny Cadwallader, you know, a lot of good content that goes out there every day. So following the right people and just, you know, taking time to read, you know, searching the internet, seeing what other people are typing is a really good way to keep up with sports and social media as well.
Great advice. Yeah, there are a lot of people out there doing a lot of good things in the space, curating content for you, showing the insights for you. And I think one thing that people don't do is actually search and follow those hashtags, the sports biz and the SM sports. Is they'll append their tweets with the hashtag in the hopes that they'll get found or whatnot. But it, once in a while, set up a tweet deck stream or a Hootsuite stream for a hashtag, or search it on Twitter. You'll be amazed that you find some great stuff.
Exactly. TweetDeck is a very underrated aspect for that, just because tweets can just flow all day and there's just like a wealth of information in there.
Definitely. All right. The last question for you in our Talking with Tarek segment. Thank you so much, first of all, for being generous with your time and your knowledge. And I think you might be a little biased on this last question, given that you are a University of Oklahoma alumnus and from Oklahoma City. Tell me your NBA Finals matchup pick and winner. So who's going to be the two teams in it, and who's going to win it?
Okay, so since you addressed the bias, yes, I will go with the Oklahoma City Thunder from the West. And from the East, I'm going to go with the Heat. I think this will be a 2012 rematch. I'm gonna have to stick with my team. Obviously, I'm gonna go with the Thunder. Yes, I'm being a homer. I understand that, but mm-hmm. I think, you know, since we played the Heat in the finals 2 years ago, the Heat were just clearly the better team. I think the Thunder have matured a lot more since then, and you know, have been playing a lot better ball. So I'm gonna go Thunder Heat 2012 rematch with the Thunder winning the championship. If the Thunder don't make it, I'm gonna go with the Spurs. I still think that, you know, people say they're old, but they're really not. And, you know, I think it could be a rematch from last year with the Spurs and the Heat. But I'm going to stick with the Thunder, and we're going to bring a championship home to Oklahoma City. That's my prediction.
So there you go. Tarek Ahmad said it here first. The Thunder will be hoisting the Larry O'Brien trophy come the end of this NBA season, and LeBron will have to cede the championship at least for 1 year to Kevin Durant.
There you go.
All right, Tarek, you survived your Talking with Tarek segment. Now it's your chance to take over the podcast here momentarily and tell us your social media all-star to follow. You just listed off a bunch before, but single out one person on Twitter or a blog or wherever they may be, who they are, and why they're worth following.
So besides you, NJH287, besides Neil, of course, I'm going to go with JW Cannon, who is at CannonJW. For three reasons. One, extremely knowledgeable in the space. Two, he's entertaining. And three, he's just an overall good guy. So I would have to go with him. You can get so much wealth from his Twitter handle. It's unreal, because not only is it articles that he posts, but even just like professional working tips, business tips, things that you should do, things that you shouldn't do, you know, like sponsorship pitches, you know, how you should address them, what you shouldn't do. And then if you just need someone entertaining to follow, like he's the guy. So JW Cannon will be my choice on this question.
Yeah, you know, he hasn't come up before on this podcast, but he is definitely one of my favorite sports business follows. Everything from the entertaining pictures to the observations to the insights, definitely a great recommendation. But don't sell yourself short, Tarek. Tell fans, tell listeners where they can find you on social media, as well as IBM and SM Sports Chat.
Sure. So follow me on Twitter, Tarek_Ahmad, TARIQ_AHMAD. Follow all the news on social media and sports at #SMSports, and then host the SM Sports Chat every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. So feel free to connect. And reach out to me on LinkedIn as well, and we will all be connected.
Excellent. And I can tell you that as much praise as Tarek just gave to JW Cannon, he deserves just as much, if not more, because Tarek is an endless source of helpful links, of great insights, of great tools, and I highly, if you're not following him already, then I don't know why you're listening to this podcast.
I appreciate that, Neil. Just trying to pay it forward for everyone who has done everything for me. So I appreciate the kind words.
Well, Tarek, I'm the one who appreciates you for being so generous with your time tonight. You're a busy man with IBM, with SM Sports. I don't know how you fit it all in every day, but we can't thank you enough for joining the podcast today. And best of luck to your Oklahoma City Thunder in the coming weeks here.
Thank you, Neil, and keep being the real deal, Neil. I appreciate you having me on and enjoy it. Hopefully I can be on again sometime in the future.
Excellent. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Tarek today. Well, thanks so much again to Tarek Ahmad for giving us his time, sharing some of his knowledge. And like I said, he is one of the best people out there. If you're interested in social media and sports, you should be following him, following the SM Sports Chat, and really keeping track of everything that's going on out there, because he is right on top of everything and offers both content for you to consume to keep up with the trends, as well as insights as to what it all means from a marketing and digital perspective. That'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. I thank you very much for listening. Hope you got something out of it. I know I did. And I am your host, your gracious host, Neil Horowitz. You can find me on Twitter at NJH287. And, of course, visit the website dsmsports.net and check out everything else that we have to offer for listeners. All right, we'll see you guys next time on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. In the meantime, we'll see if Tarek's NBA Finals pick ends up playing out the way he hopes.